And welcome everybody to the Future of Professional Wrestling Podcasting, the Body Slam Radio. Of course, my name is Duncan Welker. I am your host. And this week on the Body Slam Radio, we're going to be taking a look at ECW, Barely Legal from the year 1997, taking place in the famous or infamous, depending on your view of ECW, ECW Arena in South Philadelphia. So, yeah. Now, this pay-per-view was ECW's first ever pay-per-view. It was their first foray into the pay-per-view market, and originally it almost didn't happen. You see, because of the infamous mass trans incident in which a 15-year-old boy who was untrained got in the ring with a wrestler called New Jack, and well, let's just say there's a reason it's known as an incident. Now, many pay-per-view companies got light of that news. They said, oh, we're not going to put you guys on pay-per-view if this is this kind of stuff you're going to be doing. But some pay-per-view providers did opt to stay with ECW as long as they got an advanced script of the show and there wasn't too much blood. So, yeah. So before we get started here, I'd like to thank a couple people for their contributions to this week's episode. One of them being at Too Fast for Blood on Instagram. You can go follow him as well as me at Duncan Welker Brand, and you can follow the show on Instagram at The Body Slam Radio. Nonetheless, I asked him a couple questions as he is a ECW super fan. Unfortunately, he did not go to Barely Legal in 1997, but nonetheless, he did have some answers for me. And one of the questions I asked with him was there anything that had happened that wasn't on any DVD, VHS, or network release? And he told me, Paul E. gave a speech after the show was over, but the generators went out, so yeah. And another question I asked him, what was the atmosphere like? And he said it was emotional for everyone. And then the final question I asked him was, what made it so great? And he told me, he didn't really answer the question in specifics, but here's what I did get out of it. He said, Barely Legal was probably the most important milestone in ECW history. And it was, because, like I said, it was the first ever pay-per-view for ECW, and it kind of exposed a lot of people to ECW if it wasn't in their market, and it kind of helped them, get ready for a cable deal, with TNN later on down the line. TNN, now known as Spike, now known as Paramount Network, but, and we all know how that went. Excuse my francais there for a minute. But, I'd also like to thank former ECW superstar, the innovator of violence, Tommy Dreamer. I also private messaged him on Instagram this past week. And I asked him, of course, the same questions I asked the previous guy. And, he said 3 seconds after the pay-per-view broadcast ended, they lost all power to the building. The two kind of connect because, like I said, 3 seconds after the pay-per-view had ended, Paul Heyman could have been given a speech, and the generators went out, something like that could have happened, but nonetheless. And then, of course, he said the atmosphere was unreal, and the answer to the question what made it great was the fact that, the feeling of accomplishment in the air for both wrestlers and fans alike that ECW had made it. So, yeah. Again, I'd like to thank those two guys. Of course, you can follow their social medias, and you can follow our social media at The Body Slam Radio on Instagram and at Body Slam Radio each first letter of every word is capitalized on Instagram. So, with that in mind, let's take a look at ECW Barely Legal 1997. The first match on the card here is the Dudley Boys taking on the Eliminators for the ECW World Tag Team Championships. Of course, the Eliminators are Perry Saturn and Cronus. And so this match begins with the Dudleys coming out with Sign Guy Dudley and Joel Gertner hyping up the fact that they're the best tag team in professional wrestling. They're the reigning, defending, undisputed You know, I feel like I've heard that somewhere. I don't know why, though. I feel like it's been used somewhere else. Yeah, I can't think of it. Anyways, so they hype up some more. The Eliminators come out. And so Sun Guy Dudley gets in the ring, tries to attack Saturn Kronos, and he does. But it fails somehow. And they hit Sun Guy Dudley with the Total Elimination, their tag team finisher. And the match officially begins. The Dudleys hit the ring, attack the Eliminators, and Bubba hits a Bubba Bomb, and Devon follows it up with a diving headbutt to the midsection. Then, a little later on here in the match, the Dudleys attempted a 3D, that's a Dudley Death Drop, but Saturn broke it up with a chop block to the leg of, I believe, Bubba, maybe Devon, I don't know exactly, but nonetheless, the Eliminators hit a pair of roundhouse spin kicks, a pair of side kicks, a pair of scoop slams, and to finish it off, a pair of twisting stereo splashes from the top rope. That's one heck of a combination, if you ask me. But moving on here, Kronos then helps Saturn hit a Saturn salt to the outside, essentially making it an assisted Saturn salt. And Kronos follows it up with, and this is Joey Styles' words, not mine, a space-flying Kronos drop to the outside. Maybe that was the name of the move, but, you know. Anyways, moving on here, Saturn then, a little later on, hits a double jump springboard Saturn saw onto a Ray. Kronos then hits a 450 splash onto Devon, and the crowd is going nuts. They are excited, and they have reason to be, but I digress. Nonetheless, the Eliminators in the closing moment of this match hit the Total Elimination, their tag team finisher, if you need reminding again, on Bubba Ray, and they pin Bubba to win the ECW World Tag Team titles. Of course, after the match, Joel Gertner would come in the ring and says on the mic, on the Stud Muffin, scoring system, by a score of 86 to 83, the Dudleys retain on that scoring system. Of course, it's not an actual decision, and the Eliminators aren't having any of that mess. They come in, and they hit Gertner with the Total Elimination. So, yeah. Now, I really liked this match. It was a great opener. It showcased a lot of double-team maneuvers. It was a good pace. And it kind of showcased the fact that ECW is more than just violence, and more violence. They were violent, good technical wrestlers, and great tag teams. But nonetheless, here, I'm going to rank this match 3 stars out of 5. It was a great opener. There's nothing bad to say about it. It's just not a top match for me. Our next match here is Lance Storm taking on Rob Van Dam. Of course, Van Dam, I believe, is taking the place of the injured Chris Candido. He comes out, delivers a promo, and such. But nonetheless, Lance Storm, if you're out there listening somehow, what were you thinking with that blonde ponytail, rat tail thing, whatever it looking like? What were you thinking, man? Good God. That looked awful. But what didn't look awful was his ability to work in the ring. And we're going to see that here in this match. So, match starts up with a lockup, like most matches should. And the match is very, you know, fast-paced. Each man is countering one another. It's kind of like you see in today's wrestling. But again, this was the 90s, and wrestling was just, you know, good guy or bad guy gets the advantage throughout the entire match, and the bad guy wins, or, you know, something like that. But ECW was known for this kind of style. But, yeah. It was really good, actually. Then a little later on here in the match, RVD hits a leaping somersault plancha onto Storm on the outside, and then hits a scoop slam, gets him back into the ring, follows it up with a leg drop from the top, but goes for the cover, but Storm kicks out. And then Van Dam hits a moonsault press off the guardrail. That looked really cool just to watch that. That looked really cool to watch. Then Van Dam gets Storm back into the ring, whips him into the corner, and then you're going to have to excuse my Generation Z termage here, and you may want to look this up on Urban Dictionary if you, a little later on after this show. RVD gets Storm into the corner and then yeets a chair into Storm's face. Then follows it up with a drop kick by drop kicking a chair into Storm's face. So, yeah. RVD then hits a frog splash, goes for the pin, but Storm kicks out. And then, once again, RVD yeets a chair into Storm's face. And then a little later on here, Storm gets on the offensive, puts RVD in a double leg Boston Crab, which eventually he would transition to a single leg Boston Crab. RVD gets out of it. Van Dam goes for the Van Daminator, you know, the move where he throws the chair to the opponent and then does a spin kick. But Storm moves out of the way and weakly nails RVD with the chair. Now, I did a little research into this. The reason why Storm always had weak chair shots is because, in his words, he did not want to give brain damage to wrestlers. And that's a great thing. And I wish more wrestlers in hardcore matches would realize that. I mean, yeah, give the fans a little bloodlust, but don't give your opponent brain damage, but if that's even possible. But nonetheless, in the closing moment of this match, Storm looks to finish RVD off, but Van Dam jumps to his feet and nails him with the Van Daminator to pin him and win the match. Now, I really like this match, and I'm going to tell you my ranking, but I want to tell you something that RVD did after the match. So RVD talks about how, you know, by being here tonight, I have raised my status not only in ECW, but in other places. I've raised my value, and I will get more money, yada, yada, yada. And the fans respond with the GTFO, GTFO, GTFO chant. If you want to look that up, I suggest you do. But nonetheless, like I said, I really liked this match. It was a great technical maneuver match. It was a great match between two young guys who are now, I wouldn't say middle-aged, but, well, they're kind of middle-aged. But nonetheless, back then they could work, now they can work, and it's just amazing how, you know, you see a wrestler in his prime, and yet he can still do that stuff. So, yeah. Now, me personally, I'm going to rate this match 3.5 stars out of 5. I really liked it, and I think, you know, with the power of hindsight, down the line, both Van Dam and Storm had great matches, and I think they progressed in their careers, and I think set it off. But that's just me, of course. Next match here is a 6-man tag team match featuring the stars of Michinoku Pro Wrestling, the promotion in Japan. It's the team of the BWO Japan, Taka Michinoku, Dick Togo, and Men's Taro, I think that's how you say his name, but he was called Terry Boy over here in America, taking on the team of the great Sasuke. I looked up how to say that. Masahiro Yakatsuji, that I didn't look up, and the Grand Hamada. So, yeah. So, while the team of Sasuke, Yakatsuji, and Hamada were making their entrance, streamers were thrown in the ring. And reminder, this was the 90s. This was not a common thing over here in America. It was a common thing in Japan, and it still is. But it was just kind of cool to see that, you know, for the first time. And now it's commonplace in, like, Ring of Honor. And that's just really cool to see, and it's awesome. But nonetheless here, the match begins with an arm drag from Hamada, then he follows it up with some drop kicks and some scoop slams. A great Sasuke gets into the ring and hits some fiery kicks and a good old fashioned suplex. So, yeah. So the BWO now with a couple of trio team moves in which the first one saw an elbow, a senton, another elbow, and another elbow. The second one saw a spine buster turned into a Boston Crab, which was then turned into a camel clutch, which ended up with a drop kick to the face of Sasuke. Anyways, a little later on here in the match, Dick Togo hit a leaping senton splash, goes for the cover, but Yakatsuji kicks out. Now, Men's Taro, or Terry Boy, gets in the ring, hits a delayed corkscrew vertical suplex on Yakatsuji, goes for the cover, but Yakatsuji kicks out. Then Yakatsuji gets on the offense here, hits a Hurricane Rana, then a tilt-a-whirl arm drag, looks to springboard outside of the ring, but does that fake one, you know, where like he's looking to springboard, but then stops, and it does like a little pose thing. I love that. But nonetheless, Gran Hamada now hits a Hurricane Rana on Togo, goes for the cover, but Michinoku breaks it up. Then Hamada gets in the ring, rolls up Michinoku, but Michinoku would kick out. And before we move on, I just want to say something. Is it me, or did it seem like in ECW, any six-man tags were just tornado style? I mean, it really wasn't implied. It was just, hey, it's a tornado. Go for it. I mean, I get it. ECW matches were hardcore, so really, you didn't have to clarify it. But as someone who has only watched WWE matches or matches where six-man tags are clarified if they're tornado or not, it's just puts me off. But nonetheless here, Hamada, Sasuke, and Yakatsuji all attack Michinoku in their corner in a triple team effort. And then Sasuke follows it up with a single leg Boston Crab on Michinoku. Michinoku rolls out of it and hits Sasuke with an enziguri. And then the BWO holds Sasuke with Michinoku at one arm, Terry Boy at the other arm, and Togo gets on top of Sasuke's back and does a little muscular pose for the crowd. The BWO took over, folks, on that night. But nonetheless, Dick Togo now hits a delayed vertical suplex, goes for the cover, but Sasuke kicks out. Then Michinoku gets in the ring, hits his famed Michinoku driver, but Yakatsuji kicks out. Now in the closing moment of this match here, Sasuke hits a bridging German suplex, I believe on Michinoku. I didn't get that down quite clearly, but nonetheless, goes to the cover and wins the match for his team. And I really liked, and this didn't have any post-match stuff, so I'm just going to go straight into my rankings. I really liked it, but was it a match I could have gone without? Yes. Or was it fun to watch? Yes. It was a high-octane, fast-paced, international style from all guys, and to me, this match ranks at 3 stars. It's a good match, but one I feel like a lot of people could have done without, but I digress. So, yeah. Next match we got here is Shane Douglas with Francine taking on Pitbull number 2 for the ECW World Television title. And, can I just say something real quick? It seems like this. If you guys don't know, here in Huntsville, Alabama, we have a little wrestling promotion called Rocket City Championship Wrestling. They're great. They have shows every, you know, other week on Saturdays at the RCCW Arena in Hazel Green. You can check them out. They're a great promotion. Follow their social medias and other cheap plugs. But nonetheless, they're having a little show here in August, Rocket City Championship Wrestling Con 2. This is the second one. Last year's event was really good, in my opinion, and I got a couple interviews from those. But, unfortunately, one didn't happen till, you know, about a week or two later, and the other one is unfortunately lost to time, as it unfortunately has been lost to time. But nonetheless, with Francine being just recently added to the card, who else gonna be there? Sandman, Raven, Tracy Smothers and Tommy Rich. It seems like ECW is gonna have a strong presence there, and well, I think that's their whole focal point, considering the event is called Wrestling Con 2 Gets Extreme. But nonetheless, this match, however, 1997, Shane Douglas with Francine taking on Pitbull number 2 for the ECW World Title. So this match starts off with Douglas and Pitbull number 2 exchanging blows, because keep in mind, guys and gals, this whole backstory between these guys was that, you know, Pitbull number 1, Gary Wolf, had his neck broken by Shane Douglas. Had his neck broken twice, once originally and once when he was in the surgically repaired halo, as the fans call it nowadays. But nonetheless, a little later on here in this match, Pitbull number two is just wrenching the neck of Douglas. He wants to break it just like Douglas broke his partner's neck. And I can see why. But nonetheless, moving on, Pitbull number two goes for the cover after wrenching the neck, but Douglas kicks out at two. And then Douglas now is just wrenching the neck of Pitbull number two, but Pitbull number two escapes. Then Pitbull number two hits an atomic drop, then follows it up with a clothesline, goes for the cover, but Douglas kicks out. And so Pitbull number two goes for a powerbomb, but Douglas reverses it into Hurricanrana. And keep in mind, on this night, he weighed in at 245 pounds. And that's a cruiserweight move. That's pretty hard to pull off, in my opinion. But that's just me, of course. A little later on here, Douglas is just repeatedly hitting pile driver after pile driver, just trying to break Pitbull number two's neck. And then, a little later on here, Douglas locks in a camel clutch, but Pitbull number two escapes from it and hits a precursor to the buckle bomb. And I say precursor to the buckle bomb because, you know, he grabs him and then he throws him in the corner in a powerbomb type position. And we all know how the buckle bomb goes. It scares us to death half the time, considering it's injured Sting and Finn Balor. You know, I'm just gonna move on from that, but, nonetheless, Douglas is looking for a cross body, gets on the top, but he gets caught by Pitbull number two, and then thrown through the timekeeper's table, and keep in mind it's a wooden table, because this was ECW, they couldn't afford a little pretty timekeeper's table off to the side, but, yeah. Pitbull number one, you know, Gary Wolf's sitting at ringside, and he snaps, and he gets over the guardrail, just starts beating the crap out of Shane Douglas. But the Philadelphia Riot Squad, no relation to the current Riot, or the Riot Squad that was on TV, pulls, Pitbull number one, Gary Wolf, off of Douglas, and he's gone for the night. Oh, and I think I noticed the crowd was chanting, "We want blood! We want blood!" You know, I've always heard ECW fans were bloodlust, but, they're just calling it right out for it, but, nonetheless, Douglas drops a section of the guardrail, which was brought in earlier, when I say earlier, like, I mean like 10 seconds earlier, on to Pitbull number two. And then, again, Douglas goes up to the top, tries to look for something, but when he does, he gets caught by Pitbull number two, gets seated back on the top rope. Pitbull number two looks for a superplex, Douglas kicks him off, Douglas looks to hit a cross body, but instead, he gets drop-kicked in mid-air by Pitbull number two. And that was just, that was beautiful to look at. So, you know. So, a little later on here, both men attempt a clothesline on one another. Basically, a double clothesline spot. And I don't know why, but I just love those. They're so satisfying to see. See, because in the story behind it is basically saying, you know, both men are trying to give all they got, and both men have studied each other a lot, and, you know, it's awesome to see that kind of thing. That's why, you know, when you watch a match like Hogan and Warrior, and you see that double clothesline spot, it's like, oh, man, this is getting intense. Like, that kind of emotion is cool, but nonetheless, Pitbull number two hits Douglas with a power slam, goes for the cover, but Douglas kicks out. That's not the last time I'll be saying that. Then Pitbull number two hits an elbow, goes for the cover, but Douglas kicks out. That's two. Then Pitbull number two hits Douglas with a standing drop kick, goes for the cover, but surprise, Douglas kicks out. That's three times Douglas had kicked out, and that's pretty impressive. Well, it's not really impressive, it's just whatever. Anyways, moving on. Francine now gets into the match, hands Douglas a pair of brass knuckles. Douglas hits him with it, then gets a piece of the broken timekeeper's table, snaps it over Pitbull number two's back, goes for the cover, but Pitbull number two kicks out. Douglas then gets a chain. Oh, actually, no, he hits him with the brass knuckles again, goes for the cover, but Pitbull number two kicks out once again. Then Douglas hits him with the ring belt, goes for the cover, but
Surprise. Pitbull number two kicks out. Again. But nonetheless, here, a little later on, Douglas gets the other table piece, breaks it over Pitbull number two's back, goes for the cover, and not only does he kick out, but when he does so, Douglas's body gets lifted off him. He presses the body, Douglas's body off him, he being Pitbull number two. Douglas hits Pitbull number two with the world television title two times, looks to grab a chain from his right boot. Pitbull number two gets up, hits him with a pump handle slam, goes for the cover, but Douglas kicks out. Anyways, Pitbull number two gets the chain from Douglas's boot, hits him with it, hits Chris Candido with it, who I guess came out for some reason. Francine almost gets hit with it, but she runs out of the ring wisely. Douglas takes advantage of the distraction, rolls Pitbull number two up, but Pitbull number two kicks out. And in the closing moments of this match, Douglas hits Pitbull number two with a belly-to-belly suplex after Pitbull number two hits the ropes, pins him, and wins, and retains the ECW World Television title in the process. So, yeah. So after the match here, because Douglas won this match, the masked man that said he would make Douglas's 1997 a living hell must unmask, there's some rumblings that it could be the Ravishing One, Ravishing Rick Rude. I don't know. Was he ever called the Ravishing One? Anyway, it doesn't matter. A man comes out in a mask with the Ravishing robe, and everyone's like, "Oh, it's just Ravishing Rick Rude." But surprise, it's not. It later turns out to be Bulldozer Brian Lee of the Triple Threat. The Triple Three essentially is broken up on that night. If you don't know, Brian Lee was also the man who played the fake Undertaker in 1994. So, beautiful stuff there. But, instead of a masked man being rude, a man gets in the ring with a motorcycle helmet on, takes it off, and you know who it is? God's gift to women. I think he used that phrase. But, it's Ravishing Rick Rude. He goes after Shane Douglas and the fans. Well, I wouldn't say it's the biggest pop of the night, but it was a fairly sized pop for Rick Rude, who, keep in mind, been on Raw and Nitro in the same night. Granted, Raw was recorded and Nitro was live, but that's still a pretty neat feature. It's kind of like nowadays. The example I can think of is one of them being Tommaso Ciampa. You see, when he was first starting out, Tommaso Ciampa was both on NXT TV and Impact TV. He was actually part of the GFW invasion, but that's a story for another time. But yeah, I gotta say I like this match, but I feel like I could have done without it because it kind of seemed like it just kind of dragged on forever and never. I mean, I'm not saying it was a bad match. No, it was a great match. Just the story kind of seemed like dragged on forever. But the aftermath, that was great. I'm not gonna lie, that was probably the best aftermath that does not involve the world title on this card. But that's just me. So, yeah. Now our next match here, ladies and gentlemen, is the grudge match. It's Taz, the human suplex machine, taking on the homicidal, suicidal, genocidal, death-defying Sabu. These two, at the time, had been going at it with one another. Taz has Bill Alfonso in his corner, who will factor into the match afterwards. But, nonetheless, this match starts off with an intense, almost like Hogan and Andre. Like, you can tell, like, each man does not want to lose this match. But, nonetheless, Taz slaps Sabu. Sabu slaps him back, and the match gets off. Kicks off, and jabs are going back and forth, and oh boy, this is gonna be fun. Taz looks to put away Sabu early with the Taz mission, or the, what does he call it? Or as Joey saw, the Kahuta Hajime. I'm just gonna call it the Taz mission. Looks to put away Sabu early with the Taz mission. Sabu rolls out of it, and then
throughout the match, you see the fact that Sabu's nose is busted wide open, and it's bleeding hard. I mean, it's not, like, bleeding excessively hard, like the pay-per-view companies didn't want to happen, but it's kind of bleeding. So, yeah. Then a little later on here in the match, Sabu hits a slingshot kick off the second rope, and then Taz rolls to the outside. So, then Sabu gets a chair, springboards off the top rope into the crowd. Sabu on Taz, and they're just fighting in the crowd. Sabu goes off the chair. Taz gets out of the way, and keep in mind, they're still in the crowd here. It's out of the way, and Sabu eats the guardrail. Taz eventually does get Sabu back into the ring. And Taz gets Sabu in an armbar. Sabu does break out of it and hits Taz with an enziguri and follows it up with a springboard somersault leg drop. Then Sabu gets a chair, and it's my favorite word. Sabu gets a chair and yeets the chair right at Taz in the corner. And then Sabu jumps off the yeeted chair, keep in mind, after he set it up, to get Taz right in the face. So, beautiful stuff, people. Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. Yes. So, anyways, moving on here. Sabu tries to jump off the yeeted chair that he set up once again, but Taz dodges it, and Sabu gets dropped on his face on the chair. Then Taz goes for the cover, but Sabu kicks out. Then Taz hits a clothesline, goes for the cover, but Sabu kicks out. Then Sabu attempts a triple jump springboard off the third rope, but Taz gets out of the way, and Sabu eats the guardrail. Then Taz hits a belly-to-belly Tazplex on Sabu, sending him over the guardrail. Then Sabu looks to jump in the ring once Taz gets him back into the ring. But he does see Taz, you know, stand up, and he stops himself. So, yeah. And then Taz looks for a Northern Lights suplex, and Sabu blocks it. Then Sabu goes for a swinging DDT onto a table, but Taz counters it and sends Sabu through that same table. Then they get back in the ring. Sabu hits a Hurricane Rana off the top, goes for the cover, but Sabu kicks out. Then Sabu goes off the steel ring, like, you know, that little part of the ring. Gets amazing air. Like, he gets an amazing distance. Taz on the other side of the ring. Sabu jumps off that steel ring post thing and just, like, jumps there, and it's amazing. And that's the great thing about Sabu. I mean, yeah, he can botch some stuff like that, but when he doesn't, man, it's a beautiful, beautiful thing to see. Nonetheless, I said that twice. Sabu locks in the Taz mission on Taz, but Taz escapes out of it. Taz follows it up with a belly to back, Tazplex. And then the closing moments of this match, Sabu locks in the Taz mission, and that's all she wrote, folks. As Sabu doesn't tap out, but he loses that via that arm count thing, you know, where the ref lifts the arm. One, two, three, and then, you know. So, I like this match. I'm going to tell you my rankings, but there is some post-match stuff. So let's go right into it. After the match, Taz says to Sabu, you know, I respect the heck out of you, and this is the most physical match I've ever had. They embrace in a handshake and a hug, but then RVD gets in the ring, attacks Taz from behind. RVD and Sabu double team him, send him through a table, puts Taz in the Taz mission. And then Bill Alfonso gets in the ring, looks to fight for his man Taz, but swerve, bro. Bill Alfonso double crosses Taz because he has a Sabu shirt on, and Was Vince Russo booking for ECW at the time? Anyways, moving on. I really liked this match. It was a great story coming into it, great story during it, and a great story coming out of it. I really liked it. It was very hardcore. And it was a great match between two guys with very different styles. Of course, Sabu being the, well, homicidal, genocidal, suicidal, death-defying maniac. And Taz being this MMA kind of guy. And I loved it. And I'm going to rate this match 4 stars out of 5. I really liked it. But, yeah. So, that's really all I gotta say about that match. Next match we got here is a 3-way dance between Big Stevie Cool of the BWO, the Sandman, and Terry Funk. Of course, this 3-way dance is to determine the man who will go on to face Raven coming up next for the ECW World Heavyweight Championship. So, yeah. And to be honest, I'm just going to say this going in. I like this match already. Maybe just because it's 3 guys with 3 different styles, or maybe it's just because Terry Funk. I love Terry Funk. Anyways, moving on. The matchup begins with Sandman spitting some of his beer in the face of Stevie Richards. And then Sandman opened up the match physically with a double side headlock. When I say a double side headlock, I mean he literally took the heads of Stevie Richards and Terry Funk and put him in a side headlock. If that ain't the coolest thing, I don't know what is, ladies and gentlemen. Nonetheless, a little later on in the match here, or actually not even a little later, just a few minutes after, rather, Sandman, Richards, and Funk went back and forth with knife-edge chop. Man, the woos were going off in the building that night. Sounded like a meeting of Ric Flair's lovers. Sorry. God. Oh, I'm hilarious. Anyways, moving on. Eventually, after the barrage of knife-edge chops from each man, Stevie rolls up Sandman, but Sandman kicks out. And Stevie and Sandman with an elbow drop barrage a little later on here, and then Richards hits a leg drop on Funk, goes for the cover, but Funk kicks out. And then Funk gets up, hits a barrage of neck breakers on Stevie. Sandman disappears during this, goes for the cover, but Stevie kicks out, and then Sandman reappears with a ladder in hand, and he, well, let's just say it's time for my favorite Generation Z word again. Sandman yeets the ladder right at Terry Funk's face. And then Funk and Sandman climb up the ladder. Funk hits a moonsault off the ladder. I mean, yeah, it wasn't a perfect moonsault, but it looked cool enough for a 53-year-old man. Like, if you've ever seen ECW Barely Legal and you see that spot, you think, oh my God, I wish I could do that in my 50s. Or if you are 50, or you're going to turn 50. You know what? Moving on. Stevie hits a drop kick onto Sandman, sending the ladder into the face of Sandman. Stevie goes for the cover, but Sandman kicks out. Then Terry Funk knocks Sandman and Stevie off the ladder, picks up the ladder and does, you know, the airplane spin with the ladder in his hand and, you know, like knocking them out each second. And I just think that's kind of cool. And then Stevie hits Sandman with a super kick, goes for the cover, but Sandman kicks out. Then Stevie hits Funk with a super kick, but, sorry, I spoiled myself there. Stevie hits Funk with a super kick, goes for the cover, but Funk kicks out. And then a little later on here, Sandman leaves once again. Funk hits Stevie with a standing vertical suplex. Sandman reappears with a trash can wrapped in steel, keep in mind. And he yeets it right at Terry Funk's face, but Funk is just completely unfazed by it. Funk goes for the cover, but Stevie kicks out. And then, at this point in the match, we're in the midway point of the match here, you notice that Funk and Sandman are teaming up to help eliminate Big Stevie Cool, Stevie Richards.
And you can tell by that when Funkin' Sandman hit an assisted suplex on the trash can wrapped in steel, keep in mind. Funk goes for the cover, but Stevie kicks out. Then Sandman hits a slingshot senton splash onto Stevie. Funk goes for the cover, but Stevie kicks out. And then a little later on here, Funk yeets a chair right at the head of Sandman. Funk and Sandman hit a double team powerbomb a little later on. And I believe it's Funk who goes for the cover and eliminates Stevie. Now, keep in mind, if you don't know this already, a three-way dance, the first man that is pinned or submitted is eliminated from the match, and the match turns into a regular one-on-one contest. So, with that in mind, it is now down to Funk, Terry Funk, 53-year-old Terry Funk, taking on Sandman. So now Sandman and Funk start to work on each other. Sandman pulls out some barbed wire, but it's covered in streamers from earlier. Remember when I said the streamers were gonna play a role later on in the night? Well, here it is, the most festive row of barbed wire ever. Funk, however, then grabs the barbed wire, starts whipping Sandman with the barbed wire. Then Sandman gets it, wraps it around himself, hits a leg drop, goes for the cover on Funk, but Funk kicks out. And in the closing moments of this match here, Funk goes up to the top, hits a moonsault, goes for the cover, pins Sandman and wins the match. He will face Raven for the ECW title coming up next, actually. But before we get to that, I'm going to rank this match separately because, I mean, it's a separate match, but nonetheless, I really liked this match. It was really hardcore. I mean, very hardcore. It was a high-paced match considering you had a 53-year-old man in there. And I'm not saying that people in their 50s can't work, but, you know, nonetheless, it was very exciting to watch. And I'm going to rank this match 4.5 stars. I think it was a very good match to watch. So, with that in mind, our next contest is Terry Funk taking on Raven for the ECW World Heavyweight title. And right away, Raven comes in the ring, hits Funk with the world title, and sends Funk into a chair with a drop toe hold, and Funk is bleeding like a stuffed pig. Trademark Jim Ross. Anyways, Funk is buried under a table, then gets sent through a table. Not the same table, a different table, by Raven. And then members of Raven's, Raven's Nest comes out, including the debuting Reggie Bennett. Reggie Bennett is a former All Japan Pro Wrestling women's wrestler and a former All Pacific champion and a former IWA, I believe that's Independent Wrestling Association, World's Women's Champion. She hits a pile driver, although it kind of looks like a powerbomb. Like when you go back and watch it, it looks like she's trying to go for a pile driver, but when she follows through with it, it looks like she's hitting a powerbomb. But nonetheless, I guess that'd be like a power pile driver bomb. I don't know. Anyways, moving on. Raven gets on the mic and says to Dreamer, who's a guest commentator for both the earlier match, the earlier three-way dance match, and this match, and says to Dreamer, "I put Funk through three tables. I'm going to end his comeback, his career, and it's going to be right at your feet." And at that point, Dreamer's had enough, but he doesn't see B.D. Dudley, and if you want to look that up, be my guest, who hits him with a trash can. Then Raven, back in the ring, DDTs the ref. B.D. Dudley looks to chokeslam Dreamer through the tables that were set up there, but Dreamer escapes from it. Then he sends B.D. Dudley through the tables. And Joey Styles with his most famous line, well, you know. But nonetheless, moving on here, Dreamer's now in the ring, hits a swinging DDT on Raven. Funk looks to take advantage, goes for the cover, but Raven kicks out at 2 7/8, JR. Oh, I'm just putting on the SmackDown vs. Raw references profusely, or, you know, whatever. But anyways, moving on. Funk then rolls Raven up after that to pin and win the ECW World Heavyweight Championship. And man, that was emotional. I remember when I reviewed No Way Out 04, and I thought to myself, no, this is going to be the most emotional match I've ever watched. But boy, I was wrong. I didn't think, Punk had it in him after the beating he had received from the three-way dance and then at the hands of Raven, and it just, you know, it's amazing. It's amazing what wrestling can do for people. And with that in mind, you know, it was a great match, had a great story going in, you know, in the middle of it, during the match and going out of it. Great match, great story, and that's why I'm ranking this match a full Meltzer. And if you don't know what a full Meltzer is, you haven't listened to my No Hat review, which you should. A full Meltzer is a 5-star match, and it completely deserves that. I mean, yeah, the wrestling wasn't all there, but the emotional wise, the storytelling, it was 5-star worthy, in my opinion. So, yeah. So, that is pretty much it for the show this week. Again, I'd like to thank @TooFastForBlood on Instagram and Tommy Dreamer for their contributions to the show this week. And, yeah, that's pretty much it for the show this week. Don't forget to follow us on social media, on Instagram, @TheBodySlamRadio, on Twitter, @BodySlamRadio, each letter of each word is capitalized, so the B is capitalized, the S is capitalized, the R is capitalized, the rest is lowercase. And we are now on Facebook. You just search The Body Slam Radio on Facebook under the Pages filter, and you should pull us right up. So it's really all there's left to say, but I'm Duncan Welker, and I'll see you guys next time.